back of the Don Wayne.
They've done some.
Knocked down a ban on handguns, trigger lock requirements, brothers.
Now it's apparent.
Yeah, big.
Star of State Screen.
Kevin Riley.
He was on with us Friday night at the tattoo.
My hog leg. David, thanks for coming in. Good to see you. Thanks for coming in. Good to see you.
So you guys can have a seat.
Yeah, where do you want them? We have to.
Good to see you.
That's okay. I'd like to get one down at the side of the table for me.
He's in charge. We know who's really in charge here. Hi, Alan. Scott, see ya.
How are you, Alan?
You guys care if I record this while we're doing this? You care if I record this?
No. It's okay. Broadcast the whole thing.
Brett, you would like that, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good.
You got your green t-shirt on? It's your women's party now?
Do we all know what I'm talking about?
Right, it's in the folder, yeah.
Okay. Anybody happen to know what the Wi-Fi password is for MC guest?
It should be open.
It's password protected.
It should be
campaign manager.
Coming guest password and then an open network.
Yeah. I'm only seeing MC or MC guest, and they're both locked. Oh well. Such is life.
Try conference.
Conference?
Yeah. I think that one works for the guest one. I'm going to double check over here.
David, we're going to go last with you since we
know me.
A little bit about you. You've been here before, been there, done that, as they say. Guy, let's start with you.
Yes, ma'am.
Lynn is here someplace. Lynn is the reporter on this. She's not a member of the editorial board. Don't hold her responsible for what the rest of us do. Kyle, you've met is our photographer, and he'll be shooting you metaphorically. I'd sort of like to get to know, we'd like to sort of learn a little bit about each of you.
Looks like you log in using your COP guest, and then this is the password. You can have that. Just tell me how I can get that back.
Ask all sorts of questions and try to do this expeditiously. So,
sure.
Can you take 3 minutes, Guy, and sort of tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're specifically in this race?
Yeah, I'll start specifically, if you don't mind. My work experience and background, I feel, make me uniquely qualified, especially during these particular times. I have a background in healthcare, I have a background in education, I have a background as a small business owner. And being in the trenches, as it were, provides me a first front row seat to the issues that occur in those arenas. And having heard from many of those folks in those areas, having worked with them and also served on committees and boards with many of them, I feel that I have a unique insight into those areas. And my goal is to take that experience to Congress and to utilize that knowledge, that firsthand knowledge, and to best serve the citizens of District 3. I'm a local. I grew up in Carlisle, born and raised. My dad, in fact, was on the very first village council, helped to start the village of Carlisle back in the early 1900s. My grandparents, in fact, work on the railroad that goes from here all the way over to Richmond and Illinois. I went to college in Nashville, Tennessee, Lipscomb University, a Church of Christ school. I have a master's from the University of Dayton in secondary teaching. I worked for United Healthcare and Hospice as a community outreach coordinator. I worked in television for 19 years. There were stints also in radio and also writing for not only the Daily News, but in addition to that, a couple of the regional magazines, Discover Dayton and In addition to that, I am a two-time cancer survivor. I bring that up because most people in the area, especially the charitable organizations, know me for my work with Relay for Lives and ACS as well. I have three sons, Corey, Alex, and Trey. Corey and Alex, Corey is a senior at CJ, Alex is a eighth grader at Holy Angels in Trey Street. And that's a little bit about me.
And you haven't run for political office before, right?
I started to back in 2004 or 6. The local Democrats had approached me about running for a particular office, and I wasn't comfortable running for that office. And
what office was that?
It was the county commissioner, Montgomery County.
Against?
Chuck Curran. And after that, we kept having conversations about running, and I said, I would like to actually run against John Houston because of the charter school issues and my insight into that. And I got into it late, probably 10 days before I started to get my signatures. I found out my oldest brother was dying, and he was dying without health care, and he had depleted all of his funds, and my focus then turned to providing resources for him to get his treatments and stay alive before he successfully died of money. So that campaign never left out of paper.
So have you been active in the Democratic Party before?
No, not since then.
Prior to that, were you active?
No, not at all.
Why did they approach you about running? They just pick you out of the air?
I think what had happened, there were folks who had heard me speak at various events and functions, and I think that piqued some interest. And then I had mentioned to folks, on my radar screen at some point in my life I was going to run, but I had just pulled basically folks that I knew, friends of mine in the media, and I think that I was going to do. And then I can't remember the conversation.
Joe?
I too am a native, lived here almost my entire life, with the exception of years lived in Fairbanks, Alaska. Went to Centerville High School. My parents are all from Dayton as well, fifth generation. I'm a small business owner. I've been doing campaign and election consulting for the past 5 years.
Who have you consulted for?
Countless races. My first race was State House race in Fairbanks, Alaska, most recently working with Dr. McNeely. In between there, I've done a lot of issue and advocacy work, and electoral work as well.
Let's be more specific here. What local candidates have you consulted for?
I worked on an immigration reform campaign in Ohio.
So are these individual campaigns or issue campaigns?
That was an issue. And it's actually still ongoing. We worked for Reform Immigration for America. It's an organization that's advocating for comprehensive immigration reform. I worked in the 15th and the 9th districts, so Toledo and the western half of Columbus up to Marysville.
Being paid for that, or is that volunteer?
It's being paid. That's what I do for a living, is professional life. So. I have, like I said, 5 years of experience or so in on the ground working towards change and advocating for people every day.
Any other individuals?
Yes, I worked for Charlie Brown, which is a congressional in California. I worked, think of all the races I've worked on. I've done a lot of small, small field work stuff for campaigns. Did some field work, community outreach for the Studebaker campaign here in 06. Mostly in Clinton and Highland counties. I worked on the Obama campaign as a voter protection coordinator, making sure that everybody had that was registered to vote was allowed to vote. We actually had a lot of problems in Greene County. I've got 5 years of experience working every day with people on election issues and really advocating for change.
Any other candidates besides Mr.
Most of them are out of state. I've worked kind of all over the country. I've tried to focus most of my issue and advocacy work here. That's really what I care about.
So why does a guy in California hire me?
Because, you know, that's the way...
But what are you doing for him?
Well, out there I was doing field direction, working on a field program for them, really focusing on getting out the vote and informing voters of who Charlie Brown was, and it was in northeastern California.
So do you move out there for the duration?
Yeah, for a few months I was out there and then came back. Like I said, I've really tried to focus more on Ohio. This is my home. You know, after I moved back here from Alaska, I decided, you know, this is where I want to be, and I see that there's a lot of problems here and a lot of things that can be changed. And, you know, as a Daytonian, I think it's my duty to do something for our city. So, like I said, I went to Centerville High School. I went to University of Alaska Fairbanks. I studied natural resource management and political science. I did a lot of advocacy work there on oil drilling, actually, which is now a huge issue again. We were working, that was when the Republicans wanted to drill in Anwar. We successfully stopped that from happening. I think that's very telling because, you know, 2 years ago, everybody was standing up on the soapbox saying, drill, baby, drill. And now we see another serious effects of that. I was proud to be part of that. I live here in Kettering, or in Kettering, not here, with my wife. We got married last summer.
How old are you?
I'm 25.
What's your birthday?
January 17th, 85.
I'm sorry.
And, you know, she's a graduate student at UD, studying higher education administration, said I'm mostly working in consulting. Previously, I was an investment representative, doing mostly retirement planning. And that was something that really caused me to become more political when the economy got really bad, seeing that, you know, folks, my parents had lost a lot of what they had earned. You know, we're in a situation where my mother and father are not going to be able to retire. You know, they're in their late 50s, and they're still working full time. My stepfather works 7 days a week. So seeing that struggle has really pushed me and motivated me to do something.
When did you come back to Dayton?
It would have been 2006. Oh, and that would be something you probably recognize. I worked on Tony Noel's campaign in the primary against Sarah Palin, the governor. Unfortunately, we were not successful in that race.
So you worked for
Republicans? Democrats. No, Tony Noel's against Palin. And, he was running the primary as well.
Yeah.
But we worked, it was clear that he was going to be the victor of the primary. He was the only Democrat running that year, so it was kind of a situation where we were focusing on the governor. He was lieutenant governor. That would have been in the 90s.
You're in this race because the guy you were working for dropped out. You were working for him.
I did work. Set up and trying to get him going. But, you know, after Dr. Mealy withdrew, it became evident that somebody needed to step up and really advocate for people here. And that's what, you know, I decided to do.
Okay. David, you're back here again. Congress is where you want to be?
Absolutely.
Does that mean you're not going to go away till you win?
I don't go away. I don't give up. It's army training, you know?
You haven't done so well in the past?
I've done very well, considering the amount of money I've run with and how I've been treated by your paper. Done very well.
My case.
Efficiency, dollar per vote. Way ahead of anybody else that's run. And if there's anybody that's going to go in and challenge Turner, they're going to have to be very efficient at dollars per vote. I mean, if we look at what Jane spent in order to get shellacked both times, it was insane. And I'm able to get more votes. I've never spent more than a dollar a vote, and usually spend about 50 cents a vote, and I've learned how to use databases. There's really, I mean, let's face it, Ohio 3 is drawn for Mike Turner. Mike Turner has a boatload of money. This district is not going to be targeted by the DNC or anybody else. And if you're going to send a sacrificial lamb, at least send one who knows how to fight and has the tools and the skills to do it. I have the website that gets the hits, that has the readership. I have the ability to produce my own video, produce my own print pieces, do guerrilla marketing. And I've been there with Mike Turner since day one. I've seen him lie to people left and right. I know how he works. I know what his weak points are. There, I mean, honestly, if you think any of, unless Mike Turner truly steps on it between now and November, he's going to be reelected. I mean, is there anybody here that would disagree with me with that, on that?
So why are you doing this?
Because at least I can ask the questions that might make voters take pause. He shouldn't be winning by 20 points every election. He's run against a series of patsies. Rick Carney didn't challenge him. Jane didn't challenge him. Studebaker dropped out, and Chema barely, you know. I mean, he hasn't even debated any of these candidates. When was the last time you saw Turner debate? There is nobody better suited to go and challenge Mike Turner, period. Oh, if he doesn't, he'll be embarrassed by it by the time we're done. It does matter. I think the voters need to hear his positions because I don't think the voters understand how much of a chicken hawk, right-wing reactionary Mike Turner really is. I mean, this is a guy that wants to unleash nuclear weapons on countries that don't have nukes. That's in opposition to the doctrine of past presidents, including, believe it or not, George Bush and the Joint Chiefs. But here's Mike Turner saying, oh, yeah, we should be able to nuke people. I really have had enough of this man and his fraud that he's perpetuated over the years, and it's time somebody went head-to-head with him.
Just on a logistical note here, is this your letter?
That is my letter.
Who is it from?
It's from Ice Bandit, and it's signed as any of the stuff that you post on your site. You have people commenting all the time. Somebody who's commented on my site.
Do you know who it is?
I do not know who it is. He's been commenting on my blog for a number of years, and you can contact him, but I don't think he's going to come forward with his name, but that's the best one that was written. As long as you allow unlimited people to, you know, comment saying anything they want on your site, Alan, it shouldn't be any different having somebody submit a letter of endorsement that way.
Okay. Let's talk about a couple issues here, just to get a feel from where you're coming from. Let's start with you, Joe, and we'll go. Program, would you have voted for? I'm asking you to kind of get a feel for where you are ideologically and what your concerns are.
Right. Yes, definitely. I think the stimulus package was a necessity. Historically, we know that spending helps in times of recession and depression. When we look at the 30s, FDR passed basically what is considered a stimulus package, put people back to work. And when people go back to work, they buy goods, they use services, and that money goes back into the economy.
Would you vote for another one?
I think so. In the economy that we're still facing, we haven't seen the progress that we need. And I think that, I would say that would be something that would be down the line. Still at this point, we haven't seen a lot of those dollars enter the economy yet. The vast bulk is still out there waiting to be appropriated and waiting to be used. And so I think it's something that, we need a congressperson who's going to fight for every penny of those stimulus dollars to come to Ohio and come to Dayton specifically. We're in a situation where the vast majority of that money is going to the Midwest, specifically Ohio. There's $780 billion out there. There is $82 billion focused on the green economy, which we could definitely use here for people back to work. There is, you know, $4 billion appropriated for greening the military and greening military facilities, which, you know, being a large base, I think Wright-Patt would be a perfect place to use those dollars. But the fact is that, you know, Turner's not going to be able to get those dollars. Voting against the bill, railing against the bill, he's just not in a position to request that money. So we have a very good opportunity here to fight for those dollars and bring them here.
Okay.
First question was, would I have voted for it? Yes. Second question was, would I do it a second time? The answer would be no. The reason is that they issued the stimulus money, and as Mr. Roberts pointed out, it was necessary, and historically that has worked. Problem was, there was no follow-through in terms of accountability, where the money went, who it was going to, and then the money that hasn't been given out, why isn't it given out? What's the issues? And nobody has addressed that. So I think it'd be disingenuous for us to issue a second stimulus package without figuring out all the details of the first.
So, I mean, they put everything up on the website.
There's a reason the money's not coming out. There's a reason that they're not issuing the money. You're talking billions of dollars that are sitting there. The banks aren't lending the money. The stimulus money hasn't been applied and put to use. To me, that's an issue, and I wouldn't vote for another one until it's done.
So you're including, with your definition, you're assuming the bank bailout money?
Yes.
What about direct aid to states? For instance, Ohio has $8 billion deficit for next year. Governor Strickland is already saying he hopes that might be more stimulus money to help with that.
Yeah, as long as it's directly targeted to a specific audience. And I don't feel that first round had enough specifics with it as to where it was to go. I'm all for stimulus. I would be a fool not to, especially for a district in Ohio such as 3 that has been hit so hard. Granted, some of the country seems to be improving a little bit, but it doesn't seem to be happening fast enough here in this region and in Ohio. So certainly for Ohio, I would. But again, it goes back to, it has to be specifically handed out. Where's it going and who's going to get it?
Unfortunately, in the rush, the first one was passed. Yes, there was no choice. I would have voted for it. However, I would not vote for another one. And in fact, I would look seriously at some major changes invoking the 10th Amendment Commerce Clause. It's time that I think one of the roots of the problems in this country has been our diverting of tax dollars into private corporations' hands, be it through economic development, be it through stimulus, be it through anything that we've seen. I mean, we see it on local levels, state levels, federal levels, and there's no accountability. I don't care about promised jobs. I don't care about moving jobs. I don't care about setting up shop. Those aren't the realm of government. And if you're going to accept one penny from the government, there are going to be some strict restrictions on how much you can pay your executives, how many people you can lay off, what kind of ratio you can have between the highest and lowest paid people in the company. We are not going to hand over the taxpayers' dollars anymore to people like Bill Nudi, who are making $2,000 an hour and have lost 2/3 of the company value. Carly Fiorino, same type of thing. I mean, this has become an embarrassment to the United States in that we have bailed out these Wall Street bankers, some of whom are making, some of the hedge fund managers, 25 of them made $1 billion in 1 year. This is insane. The whole casino that we have operating under the guise of Wall Street has to stop. Glass-Steagall has to be reenacted immediately. We have to get back to real accounting principles where we're talking about concrete numbers. As it stands, Ben Bernanke himself says, oh, this is too complicated for one person to understand. Because of the secondary markets, the derivative markets, all the rest of this, stuff that supposedly increased liquidity but actually hurt our gross national product. It's time to get back to how many Americans are you employing, how much are you paying them, and if you're going to take a dime from the American people, you're going to pay, and you're going to pay people well, because we need to put people back to work. We haven't seen that. We've seen corporate executives walk out with huge bail, golden parachutes, after running their companies into the ground after we bailed them out. Those people need to be in prison. And our Congress, people need to do some serious looking at what's going on, because I'm looking at these donations that are coming to Mike Turner. He got money from J.P. Morgan Chase. He got money from Key Corp. He got money from General Electric. I mean, these are big players in the financial industry. And he got a lot of money from these people, and he's not doing a damn thing to protect the voters in his community because it's pay to play. We need to stop.
Is this personal with Mike Turner? I mean, and I don't say that pejoratively. I mean, is this about you being a thorn in Mike Turner personally as the side?
When Mike Turner and I get in the same room, it's like me and Nan Whaley. He starts doing the same thing. He is not comfortable around me. And you know why? Because I question his use and abuse of authority.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is, do you want to go to Congress, or do you want to be a thorn in Mike Turner's side?
Well, I would like to go to Congress, because I think the American people are due some, and especially the people in Ohio 3, are due some representation by someone who's not sitting there saying, oh, I did this, oh, I did that, and all he did was support this stack of people. I mean, the list
is...
He voted against the bailout, and what else has he done?
Well, I'm just responding.
Okay, right. It's very easy to vote against something, but he didn't pose any alternatives or any solutions. He didn't talk about new restrictions on the markets. In fact, when we've talked about derivatives and restricting them, and even the simple stuff like stopping naked credit default, naked short selling, and stopping the credit default swaps, he's done nothing. It has to stop. He has not been an advocate for the people who are losing their homes. He talks about the foreclosure crisis, but he's not doing anything about it. And the foreclosure crisis hasn't passed. It's going to keep getting worse and worse, and we're not holding these banks accountable. Countrywide was told they had to offer making home affordable program. And what do they have, 600,000 people maybe that they've helped out of the millions that have applied? The ratio is, I think, less than 25% of the people that applied that actually got some sort of help on their mortgages.
Okay.
And that's only the beginning of it. I mean, it's gotten way out of hand.
Rather than go down a list of issues, you know, I have a feeling all of you may have listened to each other, maybe a little bit, or know something about each other. Either know about or suspect.
Yeah, I appreciate the route you're going with that, but honestly, I've not focused on what either of these two have done. I couldn't tell you what I believe in.
Philosophically.
In terms of comparing it, give me a ballpark here.
Moderate liberal, so-called Democrat.
Okay, I gotcha. I think I'm a moderate. I think the thing that probably makes me moderate is I believe in my heart I have a stance of being able to hear both sides of issues, whether Democrat or Republican. I don't look at things, I try not to look at things in terms of Democrat and Republican, but as American. And that's the way that I try to go about making my stance and taking my stance. In fact, some of the ideas I have, some of them probably get tossed around more in Republican circles. For instance, small business. I know there's been talk, especially on the Republican side, of suspending the payroll tax from anywhere from 6 months to a year. Having been a small business owner, I think that's a wonderful idea. I think that's great. The money to pay for that plan would come from redirecting those unspent stimulus dollars so Ohio doesn't lose anything it's paid for. I love that idea. I think it originally
came through Republican circles, but I think there were some Democrats that are starting to hop on board with that. And a way, and for folks who've never had a small business and never had to have that fight, it's difficult for them to understand that struggle on a regular basis to employ people, but then also to have that payroll tax. It's a very difficult situation, and it's one that I face.
Can you point to somebody in public office, somebody whose name you might recognize as your idea of how a legislator should go about in the real world?
Yeah, I could probably. There's a registered nurse. I know her as Mrs. Capps. I don't know her first name. And she's in Congress, and she is somebody that when I...
Just somebody would know.
No, I don't think so. I think I'm very unique. I don't think there's anybody in the state or the nation who has all three education, health care, and small business ownership background. I don't. So, I can't, because I think I'm very unique in that regard.
What is it about Capps?
There are some things that she says and explains that makes it seem that she's bipartisan. She's not going down the road of disagreeing with somebody because they're of a party. But, you know, and it's funny, though, because when I say that, if you look at, I think it was March, there was a particular bill, and it had to do with small business and funding small business. And that bill, I think, came out in March. Mr. Friday and Mr. Roberts might know the exact name of the bill. It was in HR. It's now in the Senate, I believe. But what was so funny about that, that bill had some fairly good ideas, but it was split evenly down the middle. Not a Republican voted for it. All the Democrats did. And, you know, I think that's ridiculous. I think there comes a time when they have to stop that. They have to quit looking at it from a standpoint of Republicans and Democrats and look at it from Americans. Certainly we have stances that are more Democrat. I mean, you know, you talk about social issues, the health care plan, right? You know, that's a moral right. That's something we should be doing. That probably makes me more Democrat than anything else. But there are other things that, you know, we need to talk about and drop the label of Republican and Democrat and focus as Americans. We can't do that until we get the career politicians out, until we get the people out who are funded. As Mr. Zarate pointed out, you know, Mike Turner, who's funded by special interests. And it's a huge battle. It's David and Goliath, but it's the cold, hard truth.
You know the term Blue Dog Democrat?
I've heard Blue Dog Democrat.
What do you expect to line up with them?
Give me some ideas. I don't want to commit to anything until I have fully researched it.
Well, they're generally...
It's education. Yeah, I think so. You're probably right. I probably would.
Do you have any money to speak of?
I have raised money. I don't know the exact figure. No. I haven't looked today when I came
over. Do you think you're going to spend over $100,000?
Well, I don't know. I would hope so. But to beat my partner, it's going to take that amount.
What about in the primary?
No. I'm not going to spend $100,000 for a race in July. It's going to be grassroots, going door to door. In fact, hopefully our materials came off the press today, and my sons and I are going to get out and go door to door, and that's how we're going to approach it. I'm going to start in Warren County, where I'm from, and say hello to some old friends, people I grew up with, and talk to their kids, and we'll make our way home.
I got off of something that I've been doing this day. Could you address the general philosophical outlook question?
Well, I think, you know, I said it, that I haven't really been focused on anybody else's opinions, but you know, that opinion on the payroll plan, I think, is what kind of more exemplifies it. That's a dangerous path to go down. As far as talking about problems and that's an issue that we can't afford to do. I also think that that's not a place where the stimulus funds are meant to be. But I would say, addressing what my actual philosophy in politics is, I think it's sensibility. You know, I tend to be...
Well, but I mean, everybody's for sensibility. Give me something that somebody else would be against.
Well, I'm saying, you know, I think that we've kind of lost focus on what American values are. And that a lot of that comes down to, in my opinion, is civil rights, human rights. Those are huge issues that need to be addressed. We have lost focus of really taking care of citizens and listening to citizens. I mean, the biggest concern that I'm hearing out there with Turner is there's no access. The guy is hard to get a hold of. I've written 10 letters. I've called 15 times. You know, we have a history in this.
You're talking or somebody else?
This is what I'm hearing from constituents, yeah. You know, I think we have a history in this district of accessible congresspeople. We had Tony Hall, who was completely accessible, very constituent-focused. We had Chuck Whalen, who was also constituent-focused. And I intend to run an office line. I think that, you know, it's necessary that we have a 24-hour line to help constituents. I mean, people don't just have problems from the hours of 9 to 5 that they need congressional help with. You know, there's issues if you're overseas and, you know, you lost your passport and the consulate's not open. Who do you call? You call your congressperson. And if that's 3 o'clock in the morning, there needs to be someone there to help.
Can you point to an issue on which you might be outside the mainstream of the Democrats?
You know, I believe in the platform. Let's go with that. I believe that the Democratic platform is the correct platform. And I believe in most of the issues there. I think that, you know, we all were hoping for a lot of change after the 2008 election, and I was proud to be part of that election. But we haven't seen that happen as fast as we would like, and I think a lot of that is through congressional roadblocks. I mean, there is absolutely no work being done bipartisanly in the House of Representatives. It just is not happening. I think the Disclose Act passed 2 days ago in the House, and there were two Republicans to reform campaign finance. It doesn't make sense. So I think we definitely need somebody to go that's willing to work across party lines and that's willing to, you know, to reach out and say, hey, this is what I believe in, and I'm absolutely committed to that. But at the same time, I understand that we have to make progress for citizens at home.
Well, I'm still going through distinctions here. Mr. Azrati calls Turner a right-wing reactionary and the chicken hawk. Do you agree with that characterization?
I think that he is a right-wing Republican. I think that he's very conservative in his manner. I believe that, you know, with the nuclear weapon issue, you know, that was an absolutely ridiculous amendment that was put in there.
Tell us about that.
The amendment was that we should leave on the table the option to use nuclear weapons against countries that have signed non-proliferation agreements. The article that ran in the Huffington Post was implying that he wasn't for countries like Afghanistan and Venezuela, was what the article was saying. You know, he passed it in a way where it was in committee and the Democrats were voting, so they weren't in the room. It was just, you know, it was party politics. And, you know, Turner has committed himself to party politics, especially with the earmark issue. You know, this is an area that the job of the person is to bring dollars home to help people in the district. You know, and I think there's a very clear distinction between pork and earmark. Turner signed the agreement with the Republicans in the House, and then turned around and wrote a piece saying, I apologize, Ray Pat, I was supposed to get you $14 million, but it's not going to happen because I made this decision. And it's kind of trying to play it both ways.
So you disagree with the, one-year ban on earmarks?
I completely disagree. I think it's detrimental to our economy in this area.
But don't you see a certain logic, though, to say, even if all earmarks aren't bad, the system is not working and we need to take a pause and redesign it?
I agree that the system needs to be changed. But I don't think you can stop earmarks and stop, I mean, it's a flow of tax dollars. I don't think you can stop that for a year and say a blanket ban. I think that there should be no anonymous earmarking. I completely agree with that. I think and I intend for any earmark to tie my name to any earmark that I would request. But you know, those are tax dollars that if we don't fight for them, they're going to go to Colorado, or they're going to go to California, or they're going to go to Alaska. I mean, Alaska, when I lived there, was getting $3 for every dollar they sent to Washington. And that is an astronomical number. And it just really takes somebody to fight for those dollars to get them here. So build road projects, build schools, put people back to work.
Pat, do you agree with the characterization of Lord Turner?
I agree he is on the far, far right. But I think, though, it's a matter of, and when you say characterizing him, it's a matter of tone. As soon as, I appreciate the enthusiasm with Mr. Azrati attacks Mr. Turner and agree with
some of the things he says about him. However, it's the tone, and I think people are tired of that. I think they're tired of that negativity. I want it to be about the issues. I agree that it should be about making Mr. Turner accountable for what he hasn't done in Congress over the 8 years, and what the few things that he has done and the harm that he's caused. I don't think you get the ear of people, however, by taking a tone that is, you know what, I want to eat lunch at the big table with the big kids, and I'm going to throw a fit until I get there. I don't know that that's the route to take in doing that and keeping it issue-oriented.
As to the other two candidates, I've searched their websites for meaningful positions or any kind of understanding of where they're coming from. And there's nothing on Mr. Fogel's, and there's very little on Mr. Roberts, whereas opposed to, I've had well over 4 years and tens of thousands of words of where I stand and what I believe. And I've had a meaningful discussion with people in the community about all of these issues. You can find an answer on where I stand on almost anything on my website. That's the kind of two-way communication I believe in. That needs to happen. As to earmarks, I think earmarks have to go. Totally. I think it's time that we start acting as a Congress for the people of the United States, for the what's best for the entire country. It's not about putting something, one thing here, one thing there. It has to be, we have to find a better system. It's the deals being done, you do this for this, and I'll do that for that, divvying up things, it's got to stop. Because what we end up with is too many entanglements. These guys are so tied to each other through so many different things that we're not actually getting things done. And it's not, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican in the stand that our parties, I am a small D Democrat. I believe in healthcare as a fundamental right. I believe in good working conditions. I believe in fair day's pay. I believe in government doing what government is supposed to do, which is take care of the greater good. I believe government can be good. I haven't seen it, but that's what I believe in. As to a legislator that I would tend to align myself with, or who I admire. I've watched Dennis Kucinich since I was a kid. My father knew him when he worked at the plane dealer. And I've always respected Dennis. He has been characterized as abrasive. He's been, you know, called wrong. He stood up to this corporations over the Muni Light issue. And he was doing the right thing for the people. And I think that's why he keeps getting elected and keeps getting reelected. And he keeps running for president, even though he's not going to win, because he believes in what he believes in. And there's a lot to be said for that. And had we had a system of, say, instant runoff voting instead of the system we have now, he might have gotten a lot more votes. Instant runoff voting, I think, would change the nature of American politics in a huge way. And I think it's something we need to move towards.
Tell us briefly what you mean.
It's where you rank your the choices on the ballot. No more of these two-party primaries and everything else. It's not quite what California just did with what they call the jungle primary, where everyone's. But you rank. You say my number one choice for president is Dennis Kucinich. My number two is Barack Obama. If there aren't enough people that vote with my number one, my vote goes to my number two. If not enough people vote for my number two, it goes to my number three. And what it does is it gives you an opportunity to have third-party politics enter in and be competitive. Because there is nowhere in the Constitution that says this is a two-party system. There is nowhere in our, you know, it's become that. And it shouldn't be. We need more viewpoints. We need more opportunities for smaller constituencies to be served by someone, and that's not happening. So
I think you're the only one who hasn't answered the question or addressed the question about a model.
Yeah, I think Sherrod Brown is a great example. I think that he has done great things since he's been in the Senate. I think he did great things as a several times, did some work with his campaign in 06, not for them, but with them. And, you know, he's a guy that really cares about people. And takes that in Congress or in the Senate and fights for it every day. I think he's a perfect model for the way I model myself.
Let me ask each of you to highlight one policy matter that hasn't come up yet relating to your own positions that you would like to bring to our attention. Concrete policy proposal. You picked the realm. So long as it hasn't come up yet.
Hasn't come up yet. Something I haven't said. I'd strongly advocate the American people paying for the election process. I think this idea of raising money, private contributions, it's got to go. We've got a very small percentage of people who actually contribute. We've got half the people in this country that vote because they think it's rigged. The idea of buying all this media, I mean, we spent $5 billion in the election cycle for the last presidential campaign. And unfortunately for retailers, it all happens in the critical fourth quarter, and it becomes almost impossible for them to actually buy media to sell things. We've actually slowed down the ability of our country to operate by this colossal waste on 30-second sound bites that mean nothing. It's time to stage proper debates, give away airtime, produce a mailing that goes to every registered voter that has equal space for every candidate, move to instant runoff voting, and change the way we elect people. Because we're paying for these policies one way or another. We're either paying for them because of bad legislation coming through, because they're paying back for the money that they accepted from corporations and special interests, or we're paying by getting really crappy messages and 30-second sound bites. And it's got to stop. It's just not working anymore. You can look from basically the Kennedy-Nixon debates and look at how the money has just grown and where it's coming from. And the insanity we go through in terms of reporting it, and it's gotten to the point where it's not real.
Yeah, I would support the suspension of the no child left. So there is a lot of money that is based on that, and I think what they've done is put the cart before the horse. Before anything can happen, and you know, again, it's taxpayer dollars that are being wasted. I think one thing that needs to happen is that we need to stop with the testing. Let's put the brakes on that. Quit spending so much money toward that until we figure out how to fund our schools. Until we figure out what do we want our schools to be. There's really no concrete message coming from anybody in terms of what do we want our schools to accomplish? Do we want them to be STEM schools? Do we want to have technology schools, such as the Miami Valley Career Technology Center? Do we want the charter-based schools? There's a lot of money that's just, it's kind of like for, I work at a golf course, and when I'm out on the course, I see golfers testing the wind, and they'll hold up the grass, and the wind will blow it. And that's kind of what we're doing with money in terms of education. We're holding it up and letting it blow, and we're spending. But it seems to be so much focus on testing right now that I think that's a huge issue.
You consider going against Houston on the charter issue?
Yeah. I charter schools have been a bad idea. There are a lot of folks, and frankly, it needs reviewed. But from what I gather, there are a lot of folks who are in charge of charter schools, meaning administrators, who aren't qualified. There are teachers in the classroom who aren't certified teachers. I find that troublesome. I'm a little leery of the counts they use in order to get their fund. They have to do lunch counts every day, and that's how funding comes through. I think some of those need to be looked at and addressed. I think that's money that's walking out the door and nobody's having a look at it. But a larger issue, I 2 years ago, 3 years ago, now time flies, I took a second semester contract at a place called Immokalee High School. It's in Florida. It's one of the lowest rated schools in the nation. And my first day, I was teaching high school English. My first day, I had 32 students. Four spoke only English. I had probably 10 that spoke a little bit of English, but mostly Creole. They were from Haiti, and then I had the rest, you know, were Spanish-speaking. And after a month there, I walked in down the hallway one day, and it was very quiet. So I walked in the office, what's going on? They had fired up to 40 teachers and guidance counselors. And these are people who had been in the trenches, who had been working, who were certified educators. They fired them because the students did not pass the proficiency at the rate that the state had said they should. Well, they're not going to because the proficiency is not in English. Or, I mean, it is in English. And those students, they don't speak the language. And those teachers were let go. And these were good, qualified teachers. And that's happening all across the nation. And accountability here in the state as well.
Back in Ohio here, are you saying we should close down charter schools? I mean, what would you do? I
just think we should look at them from the standpoint of, okay, let's put them on a where. Let's see what you're doing in a two-year plan. Are you truly effective in terms of producing students who are equipped to move on in their educational circles? Is the money that is going in accountability? For instance, there's a charter school, and I believe it was in Cincinnati. They had an issue not long ago where a lot of money was spent, and the kids got laptops, the kids got computers, the staff got computers. And at the end of that school year, many of the teachers left and moved on, and the computers went with them. Many of the students moved on, and the computers went with them. And there was no accountability for them. No, they're not. But my issue is that there's not enough scrutiny. There's not enough. We're spending all that money. We're taking all this money and putting it into them. And that's great that we're providing a choice and people have choice and access. But is it smart money? Are we doing the right thing with it? I'm concerned about the accountability. And until we step back from No Child Left Behind and we take a peek at that and look at charter schools and find out, you know, are they truly effective before we spend more money and do more things with it? That's just an issue that I have with that.
I'm glad we're talking about education, actually. And I think that's probably, I'm proudest of my policy stance on education. No Child Left Behind is a serious problem. And it's up to reauthorization. We have to make some decisions. You know, I think we need to look at the system and overhaul it completely. I had a meeting with Mr. Gillespie, the president of Urban League, last week just to discuss what are their biggest issues and what are they looking at. And I know that busing in community schools have become an issue in Dayton as of late, and they're moving to the community school model. And he was very proud to be talking about a program that they're doing where they're going to set up basically like the Harlem Children's Zone in New York, set up by Jeffrey Canada. They're going to be doing a community-based program where all the kids that are going to this school and all of the families that live in the area.
What school is this?
I can't remember which one. It's the one right by the Urban
League. Ruskin.
That's but they're going to be doing a program where, you know, they're going to be reaching out to mothers who are pregnant and saying, hey, look, you know, we have to deal with neonatal issues before birth because, you know, low birth weight contributes to poor achievement in education. We need to talk to kids about going into Head Start programs and get them really committed and getting the community committed to the school so that they're fighting for their schools and they're working. And then these kids will have, you know, doctor checkups at school. They're going to have meals provided to them at school. And they're not able to do it all with public funding. But I think it's a great model. I think it could reform the way we do education nationwide. The other issue is, I think, you know, with charter schools, my uncle is a national delegate from the NEA, and we had a long conversation about charter schools. He lives in Massachusetts, and they have, similar to us, you know, charter schools are rather new there, and they passed a law where charter schools must meet the same standards of educator credentials as a regular school within 5 years. I think that's a great model. I think we can move to that where all teachers are equally qualified, and they have the same standards and requirements as public schools, then we're in a good position. I also believe that, you know, we need to look at funding. And if we're going to move to a program like they're doing with the Urban League, it's going to be, you know, it's not going to be all public. It's got to be some kind of public-private partnership because there's just no way we can fund schools with public funds.
Okay. We have to get into this issue here real quickly. anything that we need to know about you or in your background? We need to talk about your personal issues here that would embarrass us that we don't know about if we were to recommend you. Talking to bankruptcy, talking to domestic violence, talking to DUI, lawsuits, property taxes, you get the drift.
Speaking to you.
How bad?
I don't remember him, yes.
And he was on the grassy knoll.
That's it.
David?
I still have some problems with the website at the state of Ohio that I've got to get the right people to talk to and get it straightened out so I can make my payment from last month.
Payment for what?
Job and Family Services.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to help
me. My business.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to make a payment to the state, and their site isn't accepting it.
Why do you owe them? I mean, are you talking about...
Payroll tax.
Payroll tax.
Their website's horrible. And their help desk is even worse.
So are you currently delinquent?
I've been trying to pay them since the day. I've got the receipts of when I tried to pay, you know, the printout saying, you can't pay. And so, no.
This is the
first
time that's happened.
Yeah, it's just crazy what they put you through. I've got to deal with it, and I haven't had a chance yet. I'm going to try to get to it this afternoon and tomorrow.
Any other issues?
No, and we've been through this a bazillion times, so you should pretty much have vetted me at this point.
So what's your current situation here?
I have bankruptcy in my past. By the way, that went through. I had mentioned it to Lynn. That went through over a year ago. Medically related, it went through actually very quickly. And related to that, there was a foreclosure.
On a home or business?
I had two rental properties and a home. But they were released at different time, and the first set of medical bills came due.
So all three were foreclosed on?
Yeah, all at different time. And the first set of medical bills came through. I let the first one go. It was a place on East 5th Street, I think. It was a small rental. And then after that, more medical bills came through, and I let the second one go. And then the third one was probably a year after that as it continued to pay for that.
And so that's what precipitated the bankruptcy?
Yes, paying for the medical bills, and yeah, that was a huge part of it. You're talking over $700,000 in medical bills that I had come through.
Are you uninsured?
Yes.
What's your source of income now?
I work for a Marine Country Club. I work on the turf crew. That's why I have a nice tan.
Got it on the...
They were at one time or another, but I didn't let them go when people were living in them. I let them go after they had moved out and I wasn't able to sell. I tried to successfully sell them, and I also tried to work with the mortgage companies to try to get some kind of relief, especially with the home I had in on Brighton. I worked. I several times a week I would have phone calls with them trying to get some type of... This is right at the beginning, right at the cusp of the foreclosing boom, so to speak. And I remember making several calls. Look, this is my situation. You know, this is what is happening. And their response, AB and AMRO, their response was to raise my mortgage payment by almost $300. I think they reached it by $280. So at that point, I didn't have a choice. I mean, I was working and trying to pay for it, and it just wasn't going to happen.
When you say let them go, did you simply stop making the payments?
Yes, called them and said, look, this is my situation, and this is what I should do, that's how it was approached.
Do you have any judgments against you currently?
No. You know, I remember Lynn and I had talked about it. Mr. Greco listed a couple of things that weren't entirely accurate. First of all, he said the bankruptcy was still open, and that's not true. That went through over a year ago. And the second thing, he said there were five things that were open, and those aren't open. Those were discharged in the bankruptcy. But what happens is that the companies can submit paperwork to attach in case you have any property, in case you own any property. get funds from it in case it's sold, but I didn't own any property. Those things just sit on the county website. The only thing that currently is out there is my ex-wife, Deborah Junowitz, had filed that I was behind on child support, and she was right, I am behind on it. As soon as I started working again, I made, began making payments. My, I was unemployed for off and on for the last 4 years, probably half of that time, and I've made great strides to get it to $8,300. And as soon as I started working 6 weeks ago, I started making payments on it as well. And it's ironic because I had mentioned to Lynn and to Lou that I wasn't going to shy away from it. And I've had 19 years in television. I was a school teacher. I worked in healthcare, helping people in hospice. And I've had some great experiences. And throw in a small dab of personal problems with my health issues, which created financial issues, those make me who I am today, and I don't shy away from that at all. It's been difficult, and I'm a survivor in a lot of ways. And just as I came out of cancer, I've come out of these problems as well.
Cancer-free now?
Yes, sir. I had a tumor taken out probably 4 years ago, and it, there was nothing with it that was clean. And I've been cancer-free about 9 years now.
Let me just ask one more question. I'd like to ask all of you whether there's something you think we don't know that ought to know about your opponents.
I can't speak again for either one of them because I've not researched them and couldn't tell you. I mean, seems like a fine gentleman. I've known Mr. Ashrati through peripherally through circles, and I can't tell you anything about them. That,
I'm sorry, through what circles?
Peripherally. On the perimeter, yeah. And I don't know of anything positive or negative. I can't think of anything deleterious or on a positive that would matter at this point.
Folks, on November, so.
I think it's great that we have a primary and the Democratic Party of Montgomery County didn't choose who to, who's going to run and hasn't endorsed, and that people are given a choice.
Are you all okay with the four polling place business?
I'm okay with it from a standpoint. I think it's I don't know if it's going to help or hurt any of us, but I can see that from the standpoint of saving some money. And you know what? It is what it is, and I don't see it as a.
I think it disenfranchises voters, lower income voters, but
plus in the dead of summer, as that as well. But
I think the better way to have done it would have been to do it by mail, and they just can't understand that you can just mail ballots to people and ask them to send them back in and verify them and be done with it. Would have been cheaper
well,
just
inviting anybody to.
It's you got to go and do back and forth and everything. If they just mailed the ballot. And then you send it back in and sign off. And
who would you mail the ballot to?
Every registered voter. If they want to switch parties, they have to sign. There's an addendum on it, and that's that. It would have been cheaper, easier, quicker, and much more effective. And it amazes me how much money we're willing to squander on these things. And have over the years with these new processes, I mean, the electronic voting machines, the options for paper ballots. I mean, we just go round and round and round, and we still have questions. I mean, the case that's right now that just came up with the magistrate, Will Coxon, suing the Board of Elections over the signatures. I mean, the Board of Elections, is the system we have with two Democrats, two Republicans, and gridlock every time isn't working. It's not a very enlightened system.
You know, I understand why. I think that I agree that it disenfranchises voters. I think that the whole point of the Democratic system is opportunity to vote. So, as you know, I said, I worked on the Obama campaign doing voter protection. I think we need access, easier access to vote, especially for lower income families. I was kind of starting to see that there's not going to be a polling place on the west side. It's out in New Lebanon. So I think that makes it a lot harder for people to vote. I think we're going to see mostly absentee this cycle. I just think that's going to happen. But, it, you know, we're going to have a really low turnout. We had 6,000 voters, over 6,000 voters in 06 in the special, and I think we're probably, I'm assuming that we'll probably have less than that this time. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't give a good sampling of people's opinion.
Although 6,000, less than 4,000 voted in the primary in May. So there was 2,000 people that more that voted in the Studebaker special that didn't vote in the primary in May. So you got to wonder.
Well, there was no second person on the ballot either.
That's true. There wasn't a choice.
Make a choice if there is a point.
Okay. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. I certainly appreciate it.